Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. My name is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. This episode is brought to you by OneCause, leader in online, mobile, and virtual fundraising software. OneCause supports over 6,000 nonprofits to reach more and raise more with innovative solutions. You can visit their virtual fundraising resource center at www.onecause.com. Hi, Kay. Thank you for being this morning's guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm delighted to have you here, as well as my guest, Heather, a member of the Responsive Fundraising Consulting Team. Kay, before we get started, and you've been on the show, so this is a warm welcome back. I'm delighted to have this conversation. Before we jump into this morning's conversation, would you mind just introducing yourself to our listeners?
Of course. And it is just great to talk to you again, Jason. My name is Kay Coughlin. I am the CEO of Facilitator on Fire. And what I typically do is I do a lot of keynote speaking and training with organizations around the area of generations in the office, all five adult generations that we have working together in our workplaces today. As part of that work, I also am a leadership and executive coach, again, often in that area of how do we work better together with the people of all ages. I also do some life coaching for executives who happen to be caregivers for older loved ones, because there's a special kind of overwhelm and a lot of guilt that goes along with that. So as I've gone deeper into my study and practice with generations, what I'm trying to do is help people in as many ways as possible around the area of generations that they happen to be dealing with, both at work and at home. But the reason that we're talking this morning is that over the past few days, I have been spreading the message with my network that because I am both a business and a life coach, I know that people need mental health help right now. You know, we're dealing with a worldwide question. And what happens is that our questions cause our brains to panic, which is what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to panic. That's one of the ways that our brains protect us. We've never dealt with this on a worldwide scale before with this level of uncertainty. So I have just been letting my network know, if I can help you, if I can coach you on anything, reach out to me. I've been making myself available. And that's why we're going to be talking this morning.
Yeah. So Kay, you and I had exchanged a message. I don't know. I think we were going to kind of follow a different agenda. And you said, hey, you want to, and I said, it was a bad morning or something for me. earlier this week or last week, and you said, hey, you want to talk about that? So you're that invitation. So what we agreed to is that I'm going to just sort of pull back the curtains on my current reality. And I'm sure a lot of other leaders in the nonprofit community and in the fundraising world are experiencing similar challenges. And so I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit and let you demonstrate for all of our listeners what you do. Heather, are you okay with that? Can you stay stay engaged with us while we let Kay kind of work on me a little bit?
Absolutely. I'd love to be witness to this.
Okay. And Heather, you can you're certainly welcome to take advantage of Kay's obviously Kay's counsel as we're doing this as well. So we don't want to make this all about a Jason coaching session if it doesn't have to be. So Kay, let me sort of just tee up why your offer is so appealing to me. So I have just noticed in about the last 10 days since the sort of current reality in our world has become what it is, that, and I'm speaking from being a leader of a team myself, I've noticed that there were moments where I felt particularly overwhelmed, not so much on social media and sort of the online virtual world, but when I was getting on the telephone and talking to my team, there was a phone call that Heather can attest to. We were all on this call. I don't know, was that about a week ago, Heather?
Mm-hmm, right.
And I had just previously gotten some news that I didn't like. I had found out that a conference that I was leaving for the next day was canceled. And so, you know, it was just like, wow. And I think the team had also sent me a very long agenda. So they wanted to tackle an agenda that was, you know, rather than the usual three or four, it had like 10 or 12 items. And I was like, we can't do all this. And a lot of these questions we couldn't answer. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the overwhelm on my side. But then what I've also observed, and I think this is where some of our listeners, this could be helpful to some of our listeners, is I think the opportunity to, I think not the opportunity, that's the wrong word. I think the risk of showing some of that overwhelm is greater now that we're going to become more and more dependent in the short term with social media and with online virtual platforms and stuff. Mm. And I'm seeing some of maybe the not so best side of people. So I'm kind of checking my own communications and thinking, I don't want to come across that way. My colleague, a member of our team, shared with me some communication that she exchanged with another friend of ours, a friend of our organization. And it was evident in this communication that this person was overwhelmed and that she was letting this, I don't know that this individual understood what she was sort of revealing in her communication. So I don't want to critique all those other people out there. I want to sort of fully acknowledge that I'm the guilty party. So does that tee you up enough, Kay? Can you have fun with that?
Yeah. So before I do that, and I wrote that down so I will come back to that in just a minute. I want to give you a little orientation. This is not going to be a typical podcast episode for you or for your listeners. So here's what happens on a coaching call. And we're just going to treat this as a coaching call.
Yes, exactly.
And let me say that I appreciate your courage in being willing to do this on the record. That's amazing. And thank you so much. I think a lot of people could really stand to hear how this works, in large part because I really want people to get over their fear of asking for help, whether it's from a coach or a mental health provider or whoever, you know, ask for help. And so here's how this is going to work. So coaching is not chatting. It's not podcasting. Right. We're not friends bantering back and forth.
Yes, ma'am. I get that.
Yeah. Coaching is also not mentoring and it's not business advising. Sometimes it's business advising, but life coaching is definitely not business advising. And leadership coaching often is not advising. Here's what it is, though. As your coach, I will ask you questions. I will listen. I'm going to reflect on what you say. And I'm going to give you guidance on how to use that or maybe an alternate approach. I will likely give you a couple of tools that you can use on your own. I do that with all my clients. And if it's appropriate, we might even make a plan if that would be useful to you. Now, if this were a private call, I would say to people, coaching is not licensed. And so this is not legally confidential. Yeah. But I do keep everything confidential. I don't have to say that to you because obviously you're putting this out in the public for everyone to hear. But I do want to be really, really clear in saying to you, I will not judge you. There is no judgment here. That is part of bringing all of your humanness into a coaching call, as it's a safe space. And if that feels comfortable to you, I'm going to get back to what you just asked me.
Yeah. How about you, Heather? Can you engage with this too? We won't make you pull back the curtain quite as much, but you can do this as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm happy. Okay. I'm happy to pull back the curtain on my end. Sure.
Good. Good.
Yeah, but thanks for clarifying the relationship of a coach. I think there are a lot of misconceptions and myths about executive coaching and executive leadership coaching.
Yeah. And one thing that coaching is not, by the way, it is not licensed therapy. Therapy tends to go into your past, which is a wonderful thing. I think it's a beautiful thing. And so what I always, but coaching is very forward looking. It's present moment and forward looking. And so I always say to my clients, if we get into territory where I do think that you could use another form of therapy, I will speak right up and tell you. Many of my clients also have therapists that they work with. It's actually a great combination. So it's kind of a 1-2 punch. So that's just another difference between therapy and coaching.
Yeah.
So Jason, the thing that you mentioned that really struck me was that a friend shared with you a communication where someone was clearly overwhelmed and was oversharing. And it sounds to me like your friend either didn't respond correctly or didn't know how to respond, didn't know what to do with that. What I would like to say is what I heard there. I'm hearing a lot. We are doing a lot of judging each other, and that's because we judge ourselves. And in a case like that, where someone is clearly beginning to spin out of control in any capacity, and this is a colleague, maybe it's your kids who are home with you, like my kids are home with me.
Sure.
That is a chance for you to say, do you want to talk about this? I think you're feeling something strong right now, and I would just like to listen and turn off all of the judgment, if it's at all possible. So how does that sound to you, Jason?
I think that would have been, that wasn't the reaction. I mean, that response, I wish you would have been, I wish you would have gotten Anne's text because you would have said that to Anne, and you would have suggested that to Anne to do that with this individual she was communicating with. So, yeah, because I did. I totally passed judgment on my part. I know that as you point that out, and I don't know that I would have. I mean, I totally get that. I've probably pointed that out to other people, but I don't know that I would have pointed. I don't know if I would have sort of turned the mirror on myself in that moment when Anne reached out to me about this other communication that she was engaging with and recognized that judgment on my part. So you got me. Keep going. You've got me totally. You got my, I'm an open book.
Okay. So let's keep going with this just for a minute and let's talk about judging yourself.
Okay.
So what I hear you doing, I can hear you doing this with your voice and your words, is that you are judging yourself for judging yourself.
Okay.
This is a vicious cycle.
Okay.
And it's not particularly useful, but I don't want to discourage you from doing it. Here's what I want to encourage you to do instead, is to notice that you're doing it. And, oh my gosh, I'm judging myself and I'm judging the other person. And then say these words. Isn't that interesting?
Okay.
Instantly neutralizes that thought for you. Because saying to yourself, I'm judging myself and that's a bad thing. That's punishing yourself for being human. And instead, it's a chance to just notice your behavior and really recognize that you're just as human as the rest of us. And often, that simple exercise is enough to bump you back up out of your head so that you can be present in the situation again. It helps you to have more kindness and love for yourself, and it helps you to have more kindness and unconditional love for the person you are engaged in the conversation with.
So, Kay, what I'm hearing is to, once you recognize you're starting to do this, once you recognize you're starting to judge, to just step back and observe the fact that you're doing that, and that'll kind of remove you from further judging?
Yes, that is an excellent tool to use in the moment when you are in a conversation and you notice that you're judging. It is very difficult not to judge yourself. We all do this. It's part of the human condition. It's part of our culture. We are raised to do it. And there is judgment all around us. I mean, look at social media. Come on. There is judgment all around us. So simply being able to step into that neutral space is outstanding. And it gives your brain a chance to analyze. So let me step back for a second and tell you what's going on with our brains.
Okay.
So we've got the primitive brain, which is the brain that evolved to keep you safe. All of us back when we were living on the tundra and we were hunters and gatherers and tigers would eat us if we, you know, didn't pay attention. And that's where the fight or flight or freeze mechanism comes from. That's what your brain does to protect you when you are feeling fear. And of course, that's what we're all feeling right now is various forms of fear. And so it's a normal response, but it's not a particularly useful or helpful response. I want to avoid using the words bad. I don't want to say it's a bad response because it's normal, but it's probably not helpful. It's certainly not helpful in the long term. And so what you have to do is you have to kind of trick your evolved brain into taking over. This is what I call giving your primitive brain a cookie so it can go sit in the corner and let your evolved brain take over. And the way you do that is by thinking deliberately about something or analyzing something or planning something. Because your primitive brain can't do those things. Only your evolved brain can do those things. Your primitive brain exists in this moment now. All it knows is the evidence of bad things that happened to you in the past. And it's trying to keep you safe. Your evolved brain, though, that's what does all of the thinking. So when you can take a breath and observe, oh, I'm judging myself. I'm judging this other person. That's so interesting. You have instantly engaged that higher brain, that evolved brain, and you're giving yourself some relief from feeling the effects of that primitive brain.
Kay, are there generations that are better at kind of putting their primitive brain aside, giving them a cookie, as you said? And does your ability to do that increase as you age? Or is there a generation that is maybe better at doing that?
I have not found in my experience that there is one generation or another who is better or worse at that. And I truly believe the reason for that is that we are all raised differently in different environments, different cultures of origin, different economic backgrounds, different education. Some people do choose to become what I would call more mindful. Some people do that at a very young age. Some people do that at an older age. I think what's important to remember is that it's available to all of us. And actually, before we're done today, I'm going to give you something that you can do on your own whenever you need it. It's a tool that you do in writing to help you gain some of that mindfulness. But I don't think that the goal of it is mindfulness. I really think the goal of it is loving yourself more unconditionally and finding a way to be at peace with the circumstances around you.
Yeah, Kay,
So Kay, you got me where you need, you quieted me. So keep me going down that road you were going, because I don't know where we were going and I'm anxious to, in the time that we have, keep me going, keep us going.
So if I had, I would like to ask you, Jason, what is causing you the most overwhelm or anxiety right now?
So right now, so last week I was in Boston and I misplaced my credit card. Very simple, everyday thing that all of us do. But that credit card is tied up with my line of credit that I rely on to sort of bridge the realities of a small business owner. And so that line of credit is frozen just temporarily while they replace my credit card, because they don't want people tapping into that. Somebody who when you lose a credit card, that's what they do. And then I have a client. I have one particular client, which obviously will remain nameless, but who has not paid their bill this month. So anyway, all of this sort of comes down to, and my wife would tell you this if she was on the call with us, it's a financial thing. And so as the world has come to its current place, and my financial life has sort of come to a sort of pause, very similarly, that's probably the core of any anxiety and overwhelm that I'm experiencing.
So that, I hope you're sitting down, because this is going to blow your mind a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sitting
that,
down.
That idea that this financial pause is a problem or a trouble or has to cause you overwhelm or anxiety, I'm going to tell you that's just a thought in your head. That, Jason, okay, is a story you're telling yourself. And I do not mean that in a negative way. This is what we do as humans. We frame these stories around the things that happen to us. What I just heard and what you told me is your primitive brain trying to prove to you that you are in a dangerous situation. It's using past evidence of things that have happened to you that you didn't like the outcome.
Yeah.
And it wants you to stay in fear. In this case, fear of your finances.
Yeah.
Because you're safe. Now, you're not happy, but it doesn't care if you're happy. It cares that you're safe. You're not currently being attacked by a tiger. We don't want to change our state of being right now because you are safe. And so you've made up this story. And even though you weren't giving me evidence of how this is a bad thing, you have already decided that it's a bad thing because you're uncertain. Because yes, you're unsettled, because you're fearful, right? I will tell you that this happened to me a year ago. And so I identify very clearly with the fear that you're feeling.
I'm sure it's happened with a lot of us.
But there are other stories you could tell yourself. There are other thoughts that you could think. For example, you are an entrepreneur. You are a small business owner. A thought that you could think instead of, this is going to be a financial disaster, is you really could think, I know how to do business. I know how to create business. If something happens and this does fall apart, I can do this again. I have these skills. Very few people have these skills. How does that thought feel to you?
Yeah, it's interesting you sort of frame, it's interesting. That's the, So I tend to be the, and Heather knows this as well. Most of my team knows this. I'm a night owl, and I work best and I'm most optimistic about the world in the evenings. And I have to say that probably it's almost like you're a fortune teller or something. You didn't say you weren't something.
I'm not a mind reader.
Yes, you're not a mind reader. But I have to say I have reminded myself of that probably every night the last week, that I've got this, as it relates to getting this small enterprise propped up. I have to say, I've reminded myself of that very well after probably about 9 o'clock every evening. But up until that point, I'd say from about this point, because it's about 9 o'clock in the morning for those of us, for the three of us, and then throughout the day, you know, like when I go out to the mailbox and wonder where, you know, what's coming in the mail, for example, that's amazing. It's that primitive. I walk out. It's funny you say that. It's the way you do. And my wife does it too. We walk out to the mailbox with that primitive mindset. Like if something's not in that primitive, and if something's not in that mailbox, right? We think there's a lion leaping out of that mailbox that's going to eat us alive or something. And I can't imagine that the rest of the world doesn't have that same. They're waiting for something, whatever that need is, whether it be financial or otherwise. And now is a great time for us to all go into primitive mode. Yeah.
But I want to make sure that you hear me say this.
Okay.
You do not have to be optimistic. I am not telling you that you shouldn't think difficult thoughts.
Okay.
What the real goal of this is to recognize what you are thinking and to decide if it's serving you. And if it's not, then you try on another thought. You just try on another thought for size and see if that works for you. Now, there are a couple of very specific ways to do this, but that's about three sessions ahead of where we are.
Sure, sure.
And so what I would do at this point in these, you know, it, as I'm just helping anybody with anything they need over the next couple of weeks,
yeah,
is I would like to give you a tool that you can use on your own. And this is for anybody out there, which is a magnificent way of seeing what's in your own head. This tool is called a thought download. It's a little bit like journaling, if anyone has done journaling, except what happens when we journal is, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody, is we tend to sanitize what we write because we want to look back and like what we have written. And so it is an edited version for many of us. Now, there certainly are times when I have journaled and it's been ugly. But then I go back and I chastise myself for that. What was I thinking? Why was I thinking that? How could I write that? Okay, so with a thought download, the purpose of a thought download is quite literally to write down everything that's going through your head, every thought that you have. I have a daily practice where I do this in the morning after my spiritual time. And I also keep a notebook with me so that I can do it during the day, particularly right now during stressful times if I need to do this. So you write down. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I think what I'm hearing with the thought download process and what you, how you kind of coach Jason through some of those thought process is that, and I've heard this before, that overwhelm is a choice, and we can choose to, you know, frame our thoughts as and let them overwhelm us, or we can frame them to be more productive for us. Does that sound like, am I interpreting that correctly?
Yes and no. So again, that's about three steps ahead of where we are. When your primitive brain is running rampant, many of us are experiencing that right now, but
yes,
many of us experience that on a daily basis. And we don't know that's what's going on. Right now, we have a heightened awareness to it because we're spending more time in fear than we normally would. So the idea with this thought download, and I recommend doing these with paper, pen and paper, pencil and paper. You can try doing it digitally if you want, but I find when I type that I edit myself. And thought downloads are not about editing, so just do whatever works for you. So step one with the thought downloads is simply getting it all out on the paper so that you can see those individual thoughts that are in your head. Step two then is to look at it, and I said these words before, use these words, isn't that interesting? So step two is looking at what you wrote and not judging yourself. Simply seeing what's in there. I have found for myself the relief from all of the things churning in my brain that cause a lot of emotional weight to me. And really, I cause myself a lot of suffering when I do this, when I churn over these thoughts. Getting this out onto paper and simply having it there feels like an enormous weight has been lifted from me. But the reason that works is because of step two, where I look at it and I say, look at what's in my head. Isn't that interesting? Not, oh, those things are good and those things are bad, but, oh, that's so interesting.
Is it, so I have the worst handwriting in the world, and I take notes sometimes in this schedule book that I keep. I can't read that stuff later and I can't get it all out. Is it possible that for some of us, and I think a lot of fundraising professionals that are probably listening to this tend to be, we're very verbal. I think I could get more out that would be real and unedited if I was speaking it into, say, a recorder or something.
I mean, do what works for you. Step three of this process is being able to look at the individual thoughts and begin to process those. So could you do that with a recording? Sure. Of course you could. I haven't tried that myself, but I mean, why not? The idea is to get everything out of your head. I like having them in writing. The analogy that I use with my clients is if anyone has seen Harry Potter, when Dumbledore has this magical tool called a Remember-All and he takes his wand and he pulls the thoughts out of his head and puts them into the Remember-All. I can't remember which movie that's in. This is what you're doing. You're taking the burden of carrying these thoughts out of your head. And that's why I like doing it on paper. But of course you do what works for you. I highly recommend trying the practice. A lot of people resist it because they don't want to see what's in their head, which I totally understand. But remember that the second step in the process is just saying, oh, look at how interesting that is. And then you can stop there.
I think I'm going to be the first to be guilty of this editing thing, self-editing. I just know myself too well. It's probably pride. It's probably arrogance. But it's totally interesting what you've sort of had me do here in the last 30 minutes. I've read Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow stuff. So I'm very familiar with this sort of that lizard brain and that, but I would have never thought about this sort of passing judgment on myself and this editing sort of, I just would not have put all that together. Tell me where I'm going there.
Well, so that editing that you want to do, it's because that is what we do. We judge ourselves harshly and we try to correct on the fly. Now, I can identify with that because I identify with that. I am what many people would call a type A person. I am an entrepreneur. I like to be busy. I like to do things. When I was a fundraiser, I was competitive to a degree, but mainly when I would be meeting with people, and it was one of the reasons I was a good fundraiser, I would put so much pressure on myself to do it right. What I didn't know is that pressure to do it right was keeping me from really living fully into who I am because I was so afraid of making a mistake, Jason. When you do a thought download, let me reassure you that you can't do it wrong. I mean, there are some days when I'm doing them and I catch myself editing it. And that's fine. That's just who I am that day. There's other days I could be more honest with myself. There's no rules. Nobody else is going to look at them. I mean, I might go over them with my clients, but it's not like at the end of the day that there's somebody grading you. This is about you giving yourself relief from the suffering that your thoughts are causing you. And that's all. And so I understand the instinct to do it right.
Yeah.
But I'm giving you permission to do it wrong and do it anyway. Do it.
Okay.
Be messy, Jason.
Be messy.
Jason, you talk about it's about being messy. You've been telling your team it's messy. So
I have been saying that, but yes, I don't. So before we wrap this up, Kay. And I don't know, I don't know how far you would have, if this was our first session, I don't know how far we would have gone. I want to make sure for the sake of our listeners that we get as far as you would have gotten in a 35-minute conversation. So how much further would we go if I was enlisting you How much further would we go before we would say, okay, we've gotten far enough along in this conversation?
So I always make sure that I get to the point where I tell people to recommend to do these thought downloads. That's a tool that's available to everyone. Because of the work that you specifically have asked me to do with you today, I have two more small pieces of advice, if you would like. Certainly, we're going to have a lot of leaders and a lot of fundraisers listening to this because that is what you do. That's who your audience is.
Yeah.
It is a beautiful time to listen to people and without judging. When we are all feeling fear And when we are all basically living out of our primitive brains from moment to moment, people could do things that you think are weird, that you think are odd, that they wouldn't normally do. And we will be tempted to judge them. This is your opportunity to look at those conversations and in your head say to yourself, isn't that interesting? And say to those people who are feeling just as fearful as you, tell me more. That's it. Just say, tell me more. And you can even say, because, you know, with physical distancing, we're not close to anyone right now. If I was near to you, I would give you a hug right now because I want to thank you for sharing that with me. Mm-hmm. So that's leadership behavior that all of us can exhibit right now.
Yes.
But there's another tool that I'm recommending to everyone right now. And that is a self-care list. Whatever. And this is not a checklist. This is not a to-do list. I am not saying make a list of self-care things that you have to do every day. For the people yeah. listening to this who identify as perfectionists, please hear me. This is a list, not a to-do list. There's no grading on this. But whatever self-care looks like to you, and I would say self-care, define that as the things that you do that make you feel centered, that help you feel whole, that help you feel most like yourself. Whatever those things are. For some people, it's meditating. Meditating, exercise is fairly common. Taking a nap is a really good one. I'm not here to tell you that the things on your list have to be virtuous. So this is a personal list. This is a list for you. And when you begin to feel yourself spinning, when your head is spinning, take a look at your self-care list and find something on there that you can do to remember who you are, so that you can get back to remembering that your primitive brain is trying to take over and that, you know, you're trying to work out of your evolved brain, but you can't do those things if you really are spinning out of control. So take that self-care list and do something on it for yourself.
I love the number three. Is there more than three items on that list?
On the self-care list?
Yeah, is it? And maybe I'm turning it in. Maybe, and you're causing me to think that I'm creating a to-do list for me, but for myself. But is there three things on that list for a guy like me, or is there a length to it? And am I rewriting this list, or do I write this list now and sort of post it on the pegboard in front of me, and then come back to it when it's timely?
Well, you're trying to do it right. Again, and there's, which is fine,
<She's got me.
laughs> which is fine. There is no right or wrong. For some people, okay. it's three okay. items. For me, there would probably be about 10 items on this list of things that okay. I know I could do. And by okay. the way, on my, people tell me all the time that I should go to a spa, that I need a sauna treatment. I don't like those things at all. Those things do not make me feel good. They do not make me feel like myself. That would never be on my self-care list. But that would be on the self-care list of many of the people who I love dearly. So I can't tell you what should be on there, or, you know, how many things should be on there, how long they should take you. You know yourself the best. If making yourself a fresh cup of coffee helps you feel like $1 million, and that one for sure is on my list, put yeah. it on your list. There's nothing too yeah. small. There's nothing too big. There are different pieces of it will work for you in different situations. And it may change. Write it on a post-it note. If you don't like it, change the post-it note. You can't do it wrong. But do it. Just start by doing something. These two things, I think, the thought download and the self-care list, I think are very powerful as starting places. There's a lot more you can do with both of them, but this is just step one. This is just session one. That's all it is.
So I'm thinking of I'm a big fan of my ceramic press, coffee press. And I'm thinking about I always buy myself quality coffee. And so I'm thinking We buy the cheap stuff for sort of the everyday uses, but I do have a habit in a heavy cream. So I'm guessing that's on that list. Am I describing it accurately?
Yeah, and if you really get a lot of pleasure and satisfaction out of that, and I completely understand how that works.
Yeah.
That may be one that you might actually choose to expand, why that feels so good to you. The sound of opening the press, the smell of, opening that bag of delicious coffee, the sound of the grinder.
Yes. Those
would be things where it wouldn't be indulgent at all to enjoy every step of the process. Because you're talking about what, like 5 minutes total? Maybe? Or 10 minutes or however long primitive. That takes you.
It's not primitive at all. And, yes. I guess that's probably part of what you're looking for me to do too, is to remind myself that I'm not in this, that I'm not out on the, wild safari trying to keep myself from being trampled by wild elephants or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And that everything you're feeling is okay. And I will have to tell you, there are times when I have opened up my, the carafe we keep our coffee in, and smelled the coffee grounds, and just that sensory experience has taken me back to some memories that are so beautiful that it will move me to tears. Yeah. This is a time to live into that and remind yourself of how human you are and how the world around you is sometimes really hard and sometimes really beautiful, and they're both totally okay.
So before we wrap up, Heather, you've been listening to this. What's your thoughts on this before we sort of wrap up? You've been listening to this sort of as an observer and a listener. What's your thoughts before we let Kay wrap this up for us?
Yeah. These are practices that I do. And I'll say the kind of the self-monitoring, the getting it right in the journaling and expressing your thoughts has takes practice. I've been journaling since I was 7 years old. So that really, it takes some practice to get all your thoughts out there in a really vulnerable way and non-judgmental way, an honest way, but it really helps with personal growth. I love the self-care list. Kay, would you recommend that people just incorporate at least one of the self-care items daily on their list, to kind of try to keep themselves centered on a daily basis?
So again, I think that's getting a little too close. Actually, in both of those cases, Heather, getting a little too close to trying to do it right. Mm. When you're in your own personal space, in your own personal life, there is a lot of room for messiness. I know that that goes against the grain for many of us, for me, a lot of people listening on the call. Life is messy, and that's part of what makes it so totally amazing. So for instance, with that self-care list, actually what I would recommend to people is finding a routine that works for you. Even now, if you're working from home and your kids are home like mine are, and like Heather, I know yours are, get up at the same time every day and shower and brush your teeth. And it can be very tempting not to do those things. So those are the things that I would say try to do on a daily basis. When it comes to the self-care list, it is a tool to keep handy to remind yourself to do something on it when you're starting to feel overwhelmed or when you're starting to feel out of control, so that you can recenter yourself. So it's not, that's why I say it's not a checklist. It's a tool to use when you need it, as many times as you need. You could go days without needing it, but put it somewhere where you can see it, so that when you need it, it is there.
So, Kay, you have done this very generously. I appreciate it, and you've got me thinking. And I hope I've been a good itchy wizard.
Wonderful! This has been great.
Yeah. I'm judging myself even as I'm trying to wrap.
I know we all do it.
I'm trying to wrap this damn thing up and you've got me. I'm checking my words. Most people know how to find Heather and I. They know how to find Responsive Fundraising. We are speaking to a fundraising audience. A lot of these people out there are probably in the very same boat that Heather and I are in, trying to lead a small enterprise, consulting enterprise, or most of us are probably working for small nonprofit organizations. And they're overwhelmed. So if they've enjoyed this conversation and sort of imagine themselves in my seat as we've taken this very brief journey, and they want to reach out to you, how would you suggest that they do that?
Well, the best place to find me always is going to be on my website, which is facilitatoronfire.net. I have tried to buy .com. It is not available for whatever reason. So it's .net, facilitatoronfire.net. I am also very active on LinkedIn, and I am going to be posting a lot of content along the lines of what we have talked about today, which is unusual. That is not the kind of content that I typically post, but I'm going to be doing that very deliberately over the next couple of weeks. If anyone would like to grab a time, an hour with me for free, just to work privately, I'm going to keep that. I have a link for that right now to schedule a time on my website. If you look up in the right-hand corner, I think it says strategy call or free session or something. I can't remember what it says right now, but it's in the upper right-hand menu on my website. I'm going to keep that link active for these free sessions at least through April 3rd. Possibly longer. I haven't really decided. It really depends on some of this is financial, whatever, but I want to make myself available, particularly to fundraisers who need me. I have been in your shoes. To leaders who are feeling pressure, I have been in your shoes. I'm here and I really want to help. And I just want to say again, encourage everyone. If you've got a regular mental health care provider, if you've got an EAP benefits program through work, you know, activate those networks, reach out and get help in any way you can. It's difficult to admit that you need help, but I am here to tell you we are all human. And when fear is overtaking you, that's when you're going to be least likely to reach out. And that is when I would encourage you to reach out in whatever way possible. If it's to me, that's great. But there are tons of people out there willing to help right now. There are clergy people out there. There are therapists. There are all kinds of people who want to help. And we are helpers. Helping you makes us feel normal. Let us help you. You will actually be doing us a favor.
Thank you, Kay. It's certainly been a pleasure. You're always welcome back.
It's so good to talk to both of you, Jason and Heather. And just remember, don't judge yourselves and don't try to get everything right. Just live in the moment, love yourselves unconditionally, and give yourselves a lot of grace.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.